Z1077 welcomes you to Up Close, a weekly public affairs program presented by Z1077 News. You're invited to call in with your questions and comments. Our call-in number is 366-8471. Now, your host for Up Close, Gary Danielle.
Well, thank you, mystery announcer, wherever you are, and welcome to the Z1077 Up Close Show on this beautiful Friday morning, February 11th, 2020. I'm Gary Danielle, our producer. It's actually 2022. I got to get used to that. Our producer is Claire Groh, and our phone number for you to call is 760-366-8471. The Z1077 Up Close Show is a special presentation of Z1077 News presented in the public interest. Our guest in studio today is Jim Harvey, the president of the Homestead Valley Community Council and Morongo Basin Citizen of the Year. Congratulations. And Jim, welcome to the Up Close Show.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's an honor to be here. I'm a longtime listener, and I can't tell you how honored I am to be on this side of the airwaves sitting with you.
Oh, thanks. So the Citizen of the Year thing, was that a big surprise for you? That was great.
Total surprise. I was probably the only person in the room who didn't know.
Yeah. And let me take everybody up to speed. A couple months ago at an HVCC meeting, Sheriff Captain Niles announced that the Morongo Basin Citizen of the Year for law enforcement is Jim Harvey. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I should have known something was up, Gary, because Captain Niles and Lieutenant Walker normally sit at our presenter's table at the HVCC meetings. For some reason, they were standing up by the doorway, and they had these he had a package with him. But all the delegates on HVCC knew, and I was the only one that didn't.
Oh, well,
it was really an honor.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
And well-deserved, Jim. I know you're doing some great work up there. We're going to talk about that. But first, tell us, what is the Homestead Valley Community Council?
Thank you for asking, Gary. A lot of people hear about us. We are in the news a lot, but they wonder who we are, where we came from. Homestead Valley is actually an official community designation. The Homestead Valley Community Plan is part of the San Bruno County General Plan. So Homestead Valley is comprised of the four North Morongo Basin communities along Highway 247. That's Yucca Mesa, Flamingo Heights, Landers, and Johnson Valley. These four communities are steeped in history. So each one of them have their own community center, been around 50, 60, 70 years. And those community centers were very important to those communities because a lot of people don't know that Highway 247 wasn't paved until almost 1960. So they lived a rather isolated lifestyle. And these community centers were important because they gave people an opportunity to congregate, to share resources, entertainment, and et cetera. But what happened was eventually issues started to arise, and the community centers became advocates for their communities and for the issues that they were experiencing. And it was soon learned that many of the issues were the same issues that each were advocating, taking the same positions and advocating on. And so some of the people in the communities came up with this idea to unite, form an organization that would be a stronger voice, a single voice. And in 1978, they formed the Tri-Community Council, and it was Johnson Valley, Landers, and Flamingo Heights. And then in 1998, Yucca Mesa was brought in, the fourth member of the Homestead Valley community, and born was the Homestead Valley Community Council.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jim Harvey. Where were you born?
I was born in Elmira, New York.
Okay.
So I'm from New York State.
So what brought you from the great state of New York to the state of California?
Well, it's an interesting story. I moved to Chicago to pursue music after I got out of high school. And lived there for about 18 years and then decided that I wanted to come out to the Southwest, visited the Southwest, fell in love with it, and had an opportunity to come out and visit a friend who lived in Johnson Valley and just absolutely could not believe how beautiful the open scenery was, the open spaces, and what a difference from big city life. And so it didn't take long. I knew that I wanted to be out here.
And you live out way out there. I mean, you are in is it actually in Johnson Valley?
Oh, yes.
Or are you farther north than that?
No, I'm actually in Johnson Valley, not that far from the community center.
All right. So you're in Johnson Valley,
yes.
Near the community center. And how long have you lived out there now?
It's going on 21 years since 2001.
And, of course, you have a couple other businesses that you use to pay rent and buy groceries and that sort of stuff. So I know at least of two of them. Maybe you can fill me in there. The two I know about is your work with online. I know you do website design and maintenance. And a Harley mechanic. So very interesting set of skills you have, Jim Harvey.
Yeah, well, I took an interest in antique Harleys and really appreciate the old tank shift, you know, rigid frame bikes. They've come a long way since then, Gary, and you know that. So, you know, with shocks and you know, with, you know, foot shift. And some of them are even automatic now. It's pretty insane.
Yeah. So besides the website, are you still working on Harleys?
Oh yes, I still keep my my Harley interest up.
Well, the guys who have antique Harleys need to know where you are, because according to social media, they've got lots of questions. So,
yeah.
So Jim Harvey's the guy to talk to out in Johnson Valley. And besides those two efforts, what are you still doing?
Yeah, well, I do website design and development and graphic design for a living. And I'm also honored to be elected and serve on the Lucerne Valley Unified School District Board.
Now, the area you live in, Johnson Valley, is actually part of the Lucerne Valley School District, right?
Yes. Yeah. Johnson Valley, it's interesting, even though we're a Morongo Basin community,
right,
the powers that be at the time drawing school districts included Johnson Valley into the Lucerne Valley School District. And interestingly enough, we didn't even know we were in the Lucerne Valley School District until we received a letter one day saying that a bond was being proposed, and I threw it in the garbage. This must be a mistake. And then the proponents of the bond came out to Johnson Valley and held a community forum, and sure enough, we found out that they had incurred some pretty significant debt, and the school district was in big trouble.
And there you are. Now you got involved with the school district.
I got involved with the school district.
And now you're an elected member of that school board.
Yes, and I'm really proud. In the 10 or 11 years on the board, we put together quite a team. We have an amazing superintendent and administrators, and we've really turned the district around.
All right. Jim, let's talk about Homestead Valley Community Council. First of all, that area that is represented, what are their biggest challenges right now? And I'm going to talk about the whole area of that unincorporated area of San Bernardino County. You don't have any elected representation, so kind of you're it.
Yeah.
You carry their torch to the various county agencies. And one of the things I've been impressed with, because I do keep my ear out on what's going on in Homestead Valley, is your meetings that you have once a month, you've always got a representative from the county, and it's usually Supervisor Rao herself.
Yes.
She doesn't send a rep. I've seen the county fire chief out there, Assistant Chief Tuttle out there. So you've got fire, you've got law enforcement, CHP. So obviously you're doing some important work that the county feels that they need to be listening to what's happening in Homestead Valley. So what is the challenges being faced by those four communities collectively?
Yeah, absolutely, Gary. It's a good question. First of all, I'd like to say that clarify that the Homestead Valley Community Council is made up of delegates from those four member communities. These are people that are at the top in their community. They're volunteers. No one's ever been paid. And they are very committed to the issues in the community. So that's one of the reasons why we're so respected. It really works well. There's probably about four or five big issues right now. The one that everybody knows about is the one that you and Sheriff Dyke has talked about a couple weeks ago, and it's the illegal marijuana cultivation.
Operation Hammer Strike.
Operation Hammer Strike.
I believe they just completed week 23, and the amount of marijuana they've confiscated and money and guns is phenomenal.
It is. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But it's not a surprise given the magnitude of the problem, and it's in plain sight.
Oh, yeah, and where you are in those unincorporated communities, they feel they can operate with complete impunity because of the rural nature of the area. But that's not impunity anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And you and Sheriff Dykus and Captain Niles touched on this. Prop 64, the other side of the lack of impunity is the decriminalization or the de-escalation from the felony penalties for illegal cultivation to the misdemeanor. I mean, it doesn't matter if you grow 50 plants or 50,000 plants. and you end up with 50,000 pounds in the back of a truck, it's still a minor misdemeanor. And so that really was the beginning, we believe, of this scourge, this plague.
Yeah, Captain Niles referred to the problem as whack-a-mole. He says, we hit one, three more pop up somewhere else. We hit another one, three more pop up somewhere else. So now they've really put together quite a coalition. Last I heard, they had five teams. But those teams spent a lot of time in the Homestead Valley Community Council area.
The five MET teams have been amazing, well-funded by the county. This is a very coordinated effort through code enforcement, the district attorney's office, and through the San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors. They really came together on this.
Now, those people who would say, it's just pot. Why are we worrying? Why are we spending all of our time on marijuana? Who cares? Well, there is a significant impact, and you can tell us what those impacts are on the communities that you represent.
Yeah, I sure can. Congressman Jay Obonotti put it best. There was a community forum held in Lucerne Valley last summer, and he was present, and he talked about the challenges that he faces with other people in Congress about this and local legislators. And he said you have to look at the totality of it. These are not just plants, but there's human trafficking involved here. There's sex slavery involved. There are pesticides and herbicides being used recklessly. So there's the potential for groundwater contamination. And then speaking of groundwater, you have the groundwater theft. We're in the desert. It's a precious resource. And then some of the farms have even it's been discovered that they're stealing utilities, electricity. So this is a serious problem.
And they've actually found bodies at these farms.
Yes.
And some heavy guns, big stuff.
Yes.
So it is indeed a danger.
Yep. Prop 64 has failed in its purpose and intent, which was supposed to eliminate all of this. Gang and cartel influence was supposed to go away with Prop 64, and it instead exacerbated it.
Now, what the San Bernardino County Board of Supervisors does, they recognize that in Prop 64, changing cultivation of marijuana from a felony to a misdemeanor actually made it worse. So they've put some teeth in ordinances where they're now going after the property owners. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, because the county's hands are tied when it comes to the prosecution as a felony. Prop 64 is pretty clear. It's now state law. The district attorney, the San Bernardino County District Attorney, the Board of Supervisors and Code Enforcement sat down, put their heads together, and got very creative, and they decided to attack this from a civil point. So their hands are tied as far as the felony, but they can still go after them for other things, and that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I know they're going after, again, they're finding property owners. First fine is, don't do that anymore. Second fine is dead serious. I think it's like $10,000 or something like that.
It sure is. And the abatement ordinance that they developed is really something else. It's just recently gone into effect. Because not only are – well, when these farms are busted and they're shut down, there's still a lot of infrastructure there, and it's a huge eyesore. So the abatement ordinance addresses that. Code enforcement accompanies law enforcement when they go and shut these large facilities down, and they're immediately cited. And the clock starts then. And if they don't abate, the county will do it for them, and the county will bill them.
Goes on their property taxes. Yeah. So it's dead serious. You mentioned earlier that these farms are in plain sight. I know in 29 Palms, where I live, I would go to the Marine base on Indian Trail. The big old illegal grow right outside the Marine base for a long time. And now that one has now been debated. But people who see suspicious activity can have a big say in where they abate them.
Yeah, absolutely. The Sheriff's Department has been very clear that community involvement is critical to them, especially when they go to get to obtain search warrants in the courts. It's very helpful for them if they can say that they received complaints from the citizens in order to get those warrants.
So if you see something that looks like an illegal grow, and they're pretty distinctive,
mm-hmm.
tell the sheriff. Give him a description of where it is. Don't go out yourself. Don't put yourself in danger. Because these are some bad people. From a look at the people who are being arrested, it looks like it's primarily Mexican cartels who are using this area to grow the illegal crop. And the big danger is, if you're a marijuana smoker, no big deal. I don't think anybody cares. But with these illegal grows, because they're using pesticides and fertilizers that aren't legal, you could be ingesting something that's poisonous to you. At least with the legal dispensaries that are around, you know that the product you're getting is safe for you. These other products are not safe for you. So that's a big reason to go after them. So is there a particular number, or just call the sheriff?
You can go to code enforcement and file a code enforcement violation if you suspect something's going on. Or you can contact the sheriff department.
Now, you said the number one challenge for the combined communities of Homestead Valley are the illegal grows. What are the other challenges that they face collectively?
Yeah, the other challenge that we have in the rural communities, as you can understand, is the dumping. Tires and trash. It's amazing the amount of trash and tires that end up in the desert. And not only just along the roadways, but in some of the remote areas. And it's been brought to the community council that people will go out and they'll pull these tires and they'll take them out of the desert, but now they're stuck with them. And so we have to be more conscious about that and come up with ways that we can get these tires out of the desert, get them into the recycling places where they belong.
Now let's talk about tires. Are you allowed to take them to the landfill?
I believe you're allowed up to 4 tires per year. However, the state has some very strict guidelines on how you can transport tires.
So if they make it so difficult to get rid of them,
yes,
then I can see why people are dumping them. I mean, I'd say in just my opinion, Jim, and that's not why you're on here for. I apologize. I'm kind of going off here. But it seems to me if the county just says, bring the tires in,
right,
then we wouldn't have that problem.
Yeah, exactly. And there are costs involved, it's incumbent on the community and organizations like the Homestead Valley Community Council to work with our county representatives, try to get that funding available, and try to get those events where people can bring them in. But like you said, tires are considered a hazardous material. And so if somebody goes out and collects tires in the desert and they bring 20 or 30 back, they're not legally allowed to transport those tires. Because they're considered a hazard material. They don't have a hazmat license. So.
Damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Now, I seen some tire collection events in the past? I seem to recall your folks doing that.
Yes. There was one held at the Homestead Valley Park, and it was quite the event. They took in a lot of tires. And just at the last meeting, it was brought up that we're due for another one. So we're gonna try to work with San Bernardino County and see if we can get another one sponsored.
So that's a very good example of the communities recognizing a collective need and doing something to deal with that need. And that's something an organization like Homestead Valley Community Council can do.
Absolutely.
Now, I got to say, in the past, Homestead Valley Community Council was probably made I won't say famous, but raise their profile a little bit because the efforts of Betty Munson, a remarkable woman, and we have to give her a pat on the back because
we do.
She was always making sure that organization was in the news for what they were doing. So we're going to take a quick little break. We're on the air with Jim Harvey, the president of the Homestead Valley Community Council, and we're going to talk more about what they do, both collectively and their individual communities. But first, we got to pay a little rent, and we'll be right back. Yes, and I have to say, I went over to the Food for Thought Cafe at the Mental Physics property. It was pretty darn exciting. Food was good and nice folks and a beautiful, beautiful venue. Check it out. And as Cindy said, the best kept secret in Joshua Tree. Jim Harvey is here with us with the best kept secret of the unincorporated areas of San Bernardino County, the Homestead Valley Community Council. We talked about the collective challenges, Operation Hammer Strike, one of them. And we also have dumping as a problem. We talked about tires being a big problem, and the community tire collections are certainly doing some stuff. It is a little frustrating with the county. I know, for example, I have an old tube television I can't get rid of it. So, you get so mad about people dumping in the desert, but the county's got to do something to incentivize legal. Give us a place to take this stuff.
Yeah, we agree.
Yeah. Theater 29, we're doing a big cleanup there, and we had old paint. So we collected all the old paint in a pickup truck, and we took it down to the San Bernardino County Hazardous Waste Disposal, and they refused us because it wasn't residential. So what do we do with it? Yeah. So it's just, the county keeps doing that to you. They de-incentivize this dumping, so it's enough of that. You also have a large challenge with solar farms out there.
Yes. It seems that the Lucerne Valley, Johnson Valley area has become, kind of a ground zero for a lot of the proposals, especially the solar proposals. We have been pretty vocal about the Stagecoach Solar. I love how they come up with these names. They try to romanticize, scraping 4,000 acres of intact, desert, and then having this huge eyesore in your community that nobody wants to live around. I mean, the property values become, destroyed in those areas. And so we've been pretty vocal about that. We came out with a position paper where we would prefer that the state of California meet its renewable portfolio standards by first covering the already developed rooftops and parking lots. It seems to me that they could do that before they start making this urgent case that we have to scrape intact desert lands for these energy projects.
Now, was Homestead Valley in Community Council involved at all in the formation of DRECB? DRECB is a document which was agreed to by environmental and power representatives and the state and the feds about, yes, we understand we need solar, but we need to put it in places where it doesn't have a big impact on the environment. Were you involved in that formation at all?
No, we were not. But we do get involved in a lot of those same issues. I mean, for everything from, properly siting these projects to even recently the California Public Utilities Commission was floating this proposal to add tariffs to homeowners that have solar panels on their roof.
That's still out there.
Oh, I know it is. They tabled it. The public comments on it, the backlash they received, they tabled it. But I agree with you. There's the utility companies are really kind of being squeezed.
Well, and you've got unions involved. You've got utility companies. You've got the state. And Jim, you mentioned about rooftop. Did you know when the state compiles its information about alternative energy, they don't count rooftop solar?
They don't, and it was one of the things that we argued from the very beginning. The RPS calculations do not include point-of-use distributed generation. It really is crazy.
So the solar farms, what are their impact? You mentioned there's a big impact, of course, in those neighborhoods where people live. What are the physical impacts of these solar farms?
Well, the scenic values are destroyed. One of the biggest projects the Homestead Valley Community Council has undertaken is scenic designation for four sections of State Highway 247.
I was going to ask you about that. So good. Yeah, because that was one of Betty Munson's big things. We want a scenic highway. We want to be designated as a scenic highway. What are the benefits to the communities of the Homestead Valley to having it declared a scenic highway?
Well, the biggest one is the most obvious one, and that is the tourism. The Morongo Basin is heavily dependent on tourism, with the gem of the desert, the Josh Tree National Park. Having 247 designated as a scenic highway, our hopes will persuade people to use that highway to enter into, become Joshua Gateway communities and enter into the northern entrances to the park.
So you're trying to attract people to come down 247 to come into the Morongo Basin rather than 10 and 62.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd like to see them use the northern entrances of the park. Caltrans has been amazing on this from the beginning. When they drove the highway, they really saw the scenic value, but there's also historical value too. And so there's some plans to accentuate some of the unique areas of Highway 247 once we receive the designation.
Do you think a designation of scenic highway would then result in roadside attractions?
Roadside attractions.
Yeah, have these people coming in, are there going to be coffee shops and gas stations?
Oh.
Is that going to spur some economic development?
Absolutely. The visual assessment that we did on the highway, it's important to note, though, that we're not seeking a scenic designation for the entire highway. We took the four highly sections with high scenic value, and we focused on those. Caltrans has strict guidelines on what qualifies and what doesn't qualify.
Not that area of painted rocks right outside of Landers?
Right. So, yeah, we had to include those as intrusions, unfortunately. Yeah. But no, it will. The scenic designation will promote tourism and tourism-based businesses that you mentioned. So it's really a good, positive, win-win. The county recognizes it. The state recognizes it. It's very well supported. When we did our presentation in December, I presented with Alma Beth from Caltrans and Karen Watkins from Land Use Services. It was very well received.
So. I want to loop back to dumping a little bit because we kind of stopped at tires. But dumping in the desert is a serious problem. It is something that affects the collective communities of the Homestead Valley. What, besides having the occasional tire dumping day, what are you doing to try to control illegal dumping in those areas?
Yeah, well, we encourage people when they see the dumping to report it immediately to the Sheriff's Department. And the Sheriff's Department has been very good about that. They'll come out and they'll do a report and they'll actually investigate. Sometimes they're actually, during those investigations, they're able to find the person through evidence left, papers with names on them. It's not just tires, though, Gary. It's also trash.
Right, yeah.
And so
it's everything.
Yeah, it's very important that if you see an illegal dump, report it. Report it to the Sheriff's Department.
Now, you may report that illegal dump and not see anything and think, oh, the sheriff didn't do anything, I called. But as I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when I had Sheriff Dykus on here. I want to explain it again. The sheriff has something they called a premise history. So when you call about a legal dumping site, they make note of that. It goes into their computer. So you may not see a deputy come out. You may not see action. But then the next person calls, and now we have another annotation of a illegal dumping site. Again, it's a neighborhood system. So then when they review where they have problems in the Morongo Basin, they will see that they've had illegal dumping in this particular area in four or five different reports. Now they'll start doing extra patrols. They may put out game cameras. I've seen them actually do that at some illegal dump sites. And they have that way they have a picture of people dumping their stuff. They've got their vehicle, they got their stuff. So they go out to these dump sites and they put these game cameras out there. So there's a number of things that they are doing. So the best thing people can do is report it.
Absolutely. It's a great point, Gary. There is a guarantee that if you don't report it, there's a high likelihood that it will go unnoticed, that it will not get attention. So reporting is a good step.
And if it goes unnoticed, then the next person will go, oh, there's a dump site. What one attracts the other.
That's exactly right.
And don't confront the people because that's the law enforcement's job. But if you have a chance to take a picture of a vehicle dumping, grab that shot. And nowadays, basically, everybody has a camera in their hand all the time.
That's right.
So illegal dumping, solar, Operation Hammer Strike, illegal grows. What's the other collective challenge of the rural areas of Homestead Valley?
Well, I think another challenge is school funding, and it's something that dear to my heart because I am on the Lucerne Valley Unified School District Board. But rural schools, small schools across the state really fell victim to some what I feel were unreasonable policy decisions made at the beginning of the pandemic. What happened was the Sacramento legislature decided to revise the funding formula so that large, very large school districts like Los Angeles, San Diego, and San Francisco were funded for kids that left the district to go to other districts that were open. So they were still getting the funding. The districts that took those kids in that were open served those kids but didn't get funded for it. And we got hit pretty hard.
So they kept giving LA the money for kids that weren't there. And then where the kids went, they didn't fund them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, kind of love politics.
Yeah, well, they funded the kids. They just didn't fund the districts that were serving
right.
those kids. So,
yeah.
So we're working very hard on that issue. It looks like there might be a resolution for this year, but we took a pretty big hit last year at Lucerne Valley Unified School District. Fortunately, we had the reserves to carry us through, but we're going to serve those kids when they come to our district. So no one gets turned down.
Is the same thing happen with Morongo Unified?
I believe it did, yeah.
Okay, because that kind of flew under the radar. We didn't hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the rural areas, you were impacted even more by that.
Yeah, and normally we're funded for the kids that we serve, but the new funding formula, at least this temporary one because of COVID, stated that if you did not budget for that growth, so even though we grew, we didn't budget for it. Well, school districts don't budget for growth because if they do and they don't get that growth, then they get in trouble. So school districts, by and large, are very conservative on their when they do their budgets. Well, of course, we didn't budget for growth. We didn't predict that a pandemic was going to come, and we didn't predict that we were going to be the first district in San Bernardino County to open and that we would attract students from other districts. So the state basically said, if you didn't predict that, if that wasn't in your budget, that growth, you cannot be funded for it.
Wow.
And then we got hit a second time because of the pandemic, our ADA, our average daily attendance, went down. And that's a huge part of the funding formula. So it was quite a hit.
All of the communities of the Homestead Valley Community Council, that's Landers, Flamingo Heights, Johnson Valley, and Yucca Mesa, those four communities, have another thing in common, and that is State Route 247.
That's right.
All the communities except for Yucca Mesa, it pretty well goes right through. But Highway 247, as all of our locals know, is a dangerous highway. People just drive like nutballs on that thing.
Yeah.
I know you've been working with law enforcement. What can your communities and law enforcement do to make State Route 247 safer to drive on?
Well, Homestead Valley Community Council played a very important part in getting the right-hand and left-hand turn lanes into the Landers area. There's talk about expanding that. We have a big problem. Thank you for bringing this up, Gary, in Johnson Valley at the curve where the highway goes north and then it curves and starts west.
Yeah.
That's a no-passing area. And there have been several accidents in the past 10 years where people have died because people are passing when they shouldn't be passing in that curve. You can't see ahead of you. And so we have brought this to Caltrans many, many times. They claim they're doing studies. We're hoping that eventually we'll get some type of really visual notification that this is not a passing zone.
Caltrans is doing studies. I can save them about $1 million. Okay, people need to stop passing in the no passing zone.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure what Caltrans can do to change behavior.
We asked them to just come out and just paint no passing on the road in big letters just to make people aware that it's a dangerous part of the highway. And we could not get any movement on that. So,
what other challenges from State Route 247 besides no passing? I know putting the left-hand turn lanes into Ritchie Road, I feel a lot better. I remember every time I was going up to Gubler Orchids or that area up in Landers, I'd always really be worried about someone coming up and smacking me when I was going to turn right on Ritchie Road. So you put turn lanes there. Where else have you asked them to put turn lanes?
Well, the main problem that we see is right now after the turn lanes were installed is that curve. So we basically focused on that. But it's a good point because Highway 247, Gary, you know, it has really – the traffic has increased dramatically over the past 20 years.
It's rural. It's isolated. So people think they can drive really, really fast.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more truck traffic on it. Than there used to be. So you have to really be careful on Highway 247.
I've heard people say that when you see a lot of truck traffic, they're avoiding the scales. Is there anything to that, or is that an old wives' tale?
I don't know.
Or a little bit of both, maybe.
Yeah. It might be a little bit of both, but I noticed a big difference in traffic when the Cajon Pass fire went through, and trucks had to go around that, and they I think this 247 just got discovered. I don't believe that it's so much that truckers are trying to avoid scales.
Okay. We're going to take a quick little break. We're going to talk about the individual communities of Homestead Valley Community Council with Jim Harvey, the president of that council, right after these brief messages. It is 10:41. I'm Gary Dignot, our guest in studio today, the president of the Homestead Valley Community Council and Mongo Basin Citizen of the Year, Jim Harvey. Our producer is Claire Groh. And our phone number for you to call is 760-366-8471. Let's talk about some of the individual communities and their challenges. And let's start with Johnson Valley, which is impacted greatly by the Johnson Valley off-road off-road recreation area there. I know King of the Hammers is actually technically in Johnson Valley. So what are the challenges that are peculiar to the Johnson Valley area?
Well, the King of the Hammers has become quite an event, and Dave Cole, who runs it, has been really supportive of the community.
Yeah, I've had Dave on this show. He's a great guy.
He is.
And he is very supportive of the community.
He's built something that's just amazing. I know I often tell my friends back in Chicago that don't know anything about Johnson Valley, I can tell you this, that we're probably the smallest community in the entire area. But for 1 week, we become one of the largest communities.
Yeah, 50,000 extra people come in King of the Hammers?
This year was amazing. It wouldn't surprise me if it was way more than that, to be honest with you.
Now, I hear a lot of people who live in the Johnson Valley area actually get temporary jobs working with King of the Hammers to help with parking and traffic and cleanup and food service. So it's become a little bit of a cottage industry for the area.
Yeah. Cleanup especially. It's the days after the event, there's a lot of trash. Falls off of trailers or it's intentionally thrown. And Dave does a really good job of getting a cleanup crew together and clean that up.
Now, Johnson Valley, the Johnson Valley Improvement Association, has been an independent group for a long, long time.
Yes.
And became part of the Homestead Valley Community Council, I think about 5 or 6 years ago. Probably wrong, but correct me.
No, Johnson Valley Improvement Association was in from the very beginning. That community association is almost 70 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they were part of the Tri-Community Council that was established in 1978.
And that became eventually the Homestead Valley.
And it turned into the Homestead Valley Community Council in 1998. They just redid the Articles of Incorporation and brought Yucca Mesa in. So, but, you know, you mentioned Johnson Valley and King of the Hammers. One of the problems that we have out there is that most of the people in Johnson Valley rely on wireless internet. And when you have one tower that's designed to serve, you know, a couple hundred people at a time, plus traffic on 247, and you have 50 to 70,000 people come in, you know, in a week, it's really devastating. It just kills the internet.
Oh, so, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, we have to deal with that. So
they break the internet every year.
Yeah, they break the internet. So we're working on some alternatives, and there could be some good news on that down the road. So
yeah, that's stuff you don't think about.
It's stuff you don't think about.
And that's what an organization like Homestead Valley Community Council can do.
Yep.
What other challenges are unique to Johnson Valley?
Well, you know, water is an issue. Johnson Valley is part is served in the majority of Johnson Valley is served through Bighorn Desert View Water Agency, and they maintain well number 10, and they do a really good job of that. So, but there's no infrastructure in Johnson Valley. So
I was going to say that Johnson Valley is so spread out.
Piping
the water out to all those people would be a huge challenge.
It would be a monumental task,
and probably too expensive to even consider for the average homeowner.
Right.
And so the Bighorn Desert View Water Agency maintains a well in the area, and the people have the water delivered out there.
Yep, they maintain the community well number 10, and people have two choices: they can either go pick up the water themselves, or they can have it delivered, you know, from a delivery service.
Has that been a steady, reliable source of water then for a long time in Johnson Valley?
Yes, it has. Bighorn Desert View Water Agency does a good job of maintaining that well. And I forgot to say that either that or get a well. You know, if you have your own well, then of course you don't have to. But if your well goes down, then you have to rely on that water from well number 10. So
California has been in a drought. Has that affected the aquifer there for the Johnson Valley area, or has it been relatively stable?
No, it hasn't, because development is relatively low in Johnson Valley. Of course, the illicit marijuana grow is something that we have to be concerned about. They use an incredible amount of water, and there are quite a few of them out in Johnson Valley. So that is really one of our big concerns.
Now, an area that has a little bit more building density, probably of all the areas, will be the Yucca Mesa area. And they just came on board with you.
Well, 1998.
Okay. Well, that's relatively, you know, I mean, Johnson Valley's been there 70 years. So, but Yucca Mesa is far more built up, far more density housing. What are their challenges that's being addressed through Homestead Valley Community Council?
Well, most of the matters that we address are matters of mutual interest. So if there's a problem that's unique to Yucca Mesa, their community association would address that. We talked about cleanup. A lot of the cleanup organization is done on an individual basis through the community centers. Homestead Valley Community Council could be utilized if there was something that wanted to be organized for, you know, on a more grand level where we're doing a complete area cleanup, or if we needed to, you know, expand communication with the county on getting the funding necessary for those cleanup days. But Yucca Mesa, probably right now, I would say the biggest challenge is that the concept of the community center is really struggling right now, because, as I said in the beginning, the history of those community centers was that they were the centers for people to congregate, for to share resources, entertainment, dinners, and stuff like that. And now that we have the internet, and now that we have, you know, mass transportation, the community centers are becoming less seen as important, unfortunately. We really need to keep them. So,
well, the Yucca Mesa group that runs a community center there have done a wonderful job. I mean, mm-hmm. They're very, very good about meeting community interest, talking to people in the community. But I guess what we need to do if you want that organization to survive is use the organization.
Use the organization, yeah. Exactly. So if you live in Yucca Mesa or Flamingo Heights or Landers or Johnson Valley, go to the Homestead Valley Community Council website, homesteadvalleycc.com. Click on one of those communities and get more information on them and how you can contact them and become a member.
And just don't think just going to Facebook is going to make you get near and dear to your neighbors. Get together with your neighbors in all of these different communities. If you see the Landers Association or the Yucca Mesa organization having a community breakfast at their area, go to the breakfast. Meet your neighbors, not just through social media. We've kind of lost that connection, and especially in these rural areas that you represent. Yep. You need that human connection. You need to know who that guy is 20 acres over there, instead of just, you know, somebody on Facebook.
So yeah, that's so true, Gary.
So go to these breakfasts, go to these dinners, go to these events. A lot of hardworking volunteers do a lot of work to support those things, and they need the community to do that.
Yeah, the community members need to support those community associations. Speaking of Yucca Mesa, you know, with the pandemic, they haven't been able to hold their biggest fundraiser, which is the Yucca Fest or Mesa Fest.
Yeah.
And so it's been 2 years without that, and so that's hurting them. So.
Yeah, and everybody's been obviously affected by the pandemic. Let's talk about Flamingo Heights. First of all, how did Flamingo Heights get their name? Now, we have fun with them here on the radio. We always say if you live in Flamingo Heights, you're required to have pink flamingos in your yard. We just made that up, just so you know that.
Right.
But there are actually some people who do it. But where did Flamingo Heights get their name, Jim?
That is a great question, Gary. And if you go on our website, we have a feature picture for each one of our community members. And Flamingo Heights, we had to do the names. We had to show why Flamingo Heights received its name, and that is because of the brilliant, wonderful pink skies that are so common and the sunsets
at
night.
Pink skies. Okay. Hey, we got a caller. We'll go right to him. And Timothy, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, Timothy. Your comment today.
First of all, I just am amazed that Jim Harvey exists, because I didn't know anybody was available who took care of this stuff, and so you're doing a good job. Thank you. Anyhow, I have a concern, and that is that Yucca Valley is encroaching on Landers, and the map goes up to Retchie Road, and it includes taking the Landers post office, but there's a little notch in the map so that when JT at the post office steps out of her Jeep in the morning, she's in Yucca Valley, and when she goes to the left into the post office, she's in Landers. So I would recommend, give you a project to do. I'd like to roll back Landers to Aberdeen.
Okay, would you repeat the beginning of your query, please?
Yeah, Yucca Valley is encroaching on Landers, and the map right now shows that the Landers Post Office is actually in Yucca Valley, and there's a little notch cut out for the post office.
Okay, what map?
That shows the 92285, 92284.
Okay, but that's not city limits. I'm just kind of curious what this map. You say there is a map shows Yucca Valley encroaching on Landers. Is it a A county yes. map? Is it a city map? Is it a...
I'm not really sure. It's when you do a search for 92285, it shows Reggie Road.
That's a zip code. Let me let Jim respond to that. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's a concern there at all. I could bring it up at the Homestead Valley Community Council meeting and see if Yucca Mesa and Landers have some concerns about it, but I'm not sure what the concern is.
Yeah, the zip codes are put out by the Postal Service, but not by city government.
Right, and the way it affects me is I used to live in Landers, and now I live in Yucca Valley.
So your zip code changed?
Yes.
Anything else change for you?
What's that?
Did anything else change for you?
Oh, yeah, we've got Yucca Valley code enforcement out here wandering around looking for people who are violating code. And then we have a lot of CHP and sheriff's cars running around in the desert and the dirt roads for no apparent reason.
Okay. All right. Well, not sure that's really a concern, but...
I think what I'm hearing is that you want to see that the Landers post office be moved into the 92284 zip code.
No, I don't. I don't want to live in Yucca Valley. I want to live in Landers, and I want Landers brought back to Aberdeen.
On the Postal Service map?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, hey, Timothy, I appreciate your query. It is a concern, and thanks for listening, okay?
What I'll do is keep in touch with Jim Harvey, okay?
Yeah, thanks,
Thank
Jim.
You, Timothy.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Jessica, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to talk to you folks.
And your comment today, Jessica?
I just wanted to call and commend the work that Jim Harvey does in the community. He's a very active member in the Homestead Valley Board and everything that they do to really get the community, you know, involved and connected, and all the information they're constantly putting out and how active they are in keeping the community that it is. I just really wanted to thank Jim Harvey for all of his hard work and let him know that it definitely goes noticed.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Jessica, and remember that it's a collaborative effort. We have 12 delegates, and again, these are all people that are appointed through their community associations. They're active. They're in good standing with their community. They're people of quality and character, and it's what makes the Homestead Valley Community Council work. Thank you.
Thanks, Jessica.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for everything.
All right. Bye-bye. And that's why Jim Harvey was named the Man of the Year by the Sheriff's Department. We're going to take a quick little break. We'll be back with the final portion of the Z1077 Up Close Show. Don't go away. We are back with the Z1077 Up Close Show. Hang on, let me pull that down here. There we go. Z1077 Up Close Show. I'm Gary Dignot, and our guest again, Jim Harvey. Jim, we talked about Flamingo Heights, and I did not realize Flamingo Heights was named because of the pink sunset. So now we know.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. And Landers, of all of the areas of Homestead Valley, Landers is probably the most developed and the most organized, and tell us about the challenges for the community of Landers, probably growth.
Yeah, we always refer to Landers as our anchor community in the Homestead Valley community. They're very active. They have an exceptional community center with their thrift store, long history there. I think the biggest challenge that Landers is experiencing right now goes right back to the one that we're always talking about, and that's the illicit marijuana farms. They have been inundated with these farms, and Hammerstrike has done a really good job, but there's still a lot of them in Landers.
And probably because, A, it's rural, and B, it's right next to a state highway.
Yep.
So you got the transportation there, too.
And you have the water infrastructure there, and again, Bighorn Desert View Water Agency has done an amazing job addressing that through their policies.
A lot of people are moving into the Homestead Valley Community Council areas because of decentralization of business with the COVID pandemic, people working out of their homes and looking to move in rural areas. What is the advice that you have to people who are looking to move into the communities of the Homestead Valley Community Council?
Yeah, my biggest would be just to understand and respect the history of the community. Change is often good, but it's not very necessary, and we still want to keep that rural character to Landers and Flamingo Heights. And like you said, we're seeing a lot of people moving out from Los Angeles. The pandemic has essentially put Homestead Valley on the map. It's become a magnet for people to get out of the urban areas and experience rural life. So when you get out here, enjoy it and appreciate it and understand, you know, that it needs to be preserved.
There was a great article in the L.A. Times a few days ago about people who have moved out to the desert from the L.A. area, and then they experience their first summer. Then they figure out what a swamp cooler is, all that kind of stuff. So, Jim Harvey, thanks for coming. And I think if we leave any advice to folks, you'd agree with me, is get involved in your community, whether you live in Landers, Flamingo Heights, Johnson Valley, or Yucca Mesa. They have these community organizations. Get involved in them. It seems we never hear from people until a tax is going up or,
that's right,
or something like that. But get that's involved right. with those. Jim Harvey, thank you for being our guest. We'll be back with more next week. I'm Gary Deneau. Until then, thanks for listening. Drive carefully and God bless. Bye-bye.